Thanks, Don.
I got to tell you that I realize that your laughter brings joy to my heart. So thank you. It does. Yeah, I can just feel it. So let's see. Let's start with a song. I think I have pulled up. Let's see. Don, I don't know if you muted me and then unmuted me. You may have heard me laughing. I was laughing at Anne because no, it's good. I was laughing at Anne because it must have been the angle she was eating. She looked like a rabbit. I swear. Nom, 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 nom. thanks, Anne. Because, you know, all I had was up was an ugly screen. So thank you for providing the entertainment behind that music. It's funny, I did think Regina was going to be out today. I think I was mixing up two different days. I was mixing up yesterday when she picked up her mama, and next week when she's not going to be here because of the retreat. But anyway, I had this whole plan where I, you know, because I was on vacation last night. I haven't journaled for a while. I was going to write during that hour of her recorded thing because she wasn't going to be here live. And I'm like, oh. So, but I'm happy to report that I came in here and got my printed journal. And it's exactly where I need to be. Imagine that. Imagine that. I do feel to start with my spiritual aspiration and vision plan. I read this to you guys last time we met. I hope you don't mind me sharing it again, because that was the guidance. So the spiritual aspiration is live in open-hearted expectation further. And the vision plan, I look in each moment. By the way, before I read each of these, I want to say that I heard Anne hit on a bunch of these this morning. I'm like, yep, that's in there. So some of these may sound kind of familiar if you heard Anne. Anyhow, I look in each moment to discover what meaning I have applied. I pause to appreciate what is actually happening in this moment, here and now. I do not compare anything to anything else. Any comparison holds within it the false assumption that life is constructed of separate static people and events. What I am is not static. And I'll tell you that, you know, we do these spiritual aspirations and vision plans as like a true north. Certainly the spiritual aspiration is true north. But these supporting statements are, if done correctly, I guess, can be really, really helpful to reorienting me, I was going to say you, but me, to that true north. And this particular statement in this vision plan has been so helpful over the past, well, since I wrote it, past few weeks. I do not compare anything to anything else, because it's like, you know, it's like a little red light comes on, bing. Oh, I'm comparing. Well, you know, what am I comparing? Am I comparing myself to others? Am I comparing this time to last time? Or, you know, gee, I hope tomorrow's as good as today. What, you know, I mean, so the comparison somehow is just like a blinking light, like I say. So it's very, very helpful to have this as part of the vision plan. I do not compare anything to anything else. I remember the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind, and so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and irrelevant. And I will tell you that I'm finding that, and you know, we're supposed to write like visionary statements, what we want to be, our experience, as if it's our current experience as part of writing that vision plan. And I can tell you that that last aspiration, vision plan statement, is becoming more and more currently true for me. I remember the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind, and so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and whatever that word is, irrelevant. And it's so nice to be able to do this. And in fact, you know, that's one of the things that we'll be talking about in the Freedom from the Judge retreat. But it's so nice to be able to go, that's irrelevant. You know, it's just like Anne was talking, that's not helpful. That's not helpful. And to easily dismiss it, just knowing that all of that stuff that I hear, it's all irrelevant and unhelpful and unimportant. The next statement. I joyously participate in each experience by removing my self-concept as the central focus of the experience. And I can tell you that this also is becoming easier for me, sometimes more than others. But I can hear, you know, and I think when I talked to you all about it last week, I said, I remember my mom going, you think the world revolves around you, don't you? And me going, yeah, I do. but I can see that, you know, and that's the idea behind that. I can see that when I'm, you know, is particularly being home with family. Gosh, I don't know if I can even put it into words or whether I even need to, but yeah, it's kind of like, you know, how does what's going on relate to me? Well, let me tell you, that happened to me once and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Or, you know, or, you know, even kind of like Anne was saying this morning, well, you know, if I'm important, if people find me important, then they'll do this and that. Or, you know, it's just, you know, then that wouldn't have been said that way. Or, and not that Anne said any of that this morning, but, you know, yeah, really, really. Mom put it best, thinking the world revolves around you. Regina talked about it in one of the tips. We used Regina's tips last week while we were on vacation. And it said something about, you know, am I going, I don't want it to rain today because I have picnic plans. Well, what about the farmers? What about the flowers? Maybe they want the rain, you know. So really just trying to take yourself out of the center of what's going on. Quit being so self-centered. So that has been very helpful. And then the last statement in my vision plan, I welcome and rest in the wobble because that is where my truth is made welcome. And you probably recall talking about the wobble is really the willingness to live in the unknown, which includes just a multitude of things, not needing to know how things are going to turn out, not needing things to turn out in any particular fashion, not trying to position things or position myself so that I'll be in a favorable position in relation to what's going on. None of that. All of that goes out the window when I'm just like, I don't know how this is supposed to unfold. I don't know what's supposed to be happening now. I know what this one says, you know, the ego, the judge says about what ought to be going on now and how it normally goes and how it should go. And blah, 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 you know, I'm willing to not know. I'm willing. Somebody said this the other day. Can't remember who. I'm willing to be wrong about everything. And to just let it be. Let it unfold the way it unfolds. Everything. Let people be who they are, say what they want to say, do what they want to do, and just let it be. So anyhow, that's the spiritual aspiration and vision plan. So, and I frankly, you know, I print out this journal and then I, as I go through it, I throw it in the garbage, cause it's all on the computer, you know? And, but as I share it with you guys, I throw it in the garbage. And this morning I pulled out a whole page. I think I told you all about, a couple weeks ago and that, cause I didn't see any need to go into it. But it was like, tell me what my spiritual aspiration is, GD. So, you know, you all heard that once. You sure don't need to hear that again. But at the very end of that, I did write, how about living with an open heart? I want to live with an open heart. Is that for real? I want to live with an open heart. Amen. So that's that was the beginning of sanity. Let me, see what, none of my beeswax, Kathy says, yeah, none of my beeswax, what people do or say. All right. And this was immediately after, well, you'll hear that I wrote, well, thank God for that existential crisis. That's what I've learned since Wednesday, you know, this was, gosh, 3 weeks ago. And so I think I summarized here. So let me just read that this desperate cry for meaning is the bleeding BS of the false self. Get this, buddy. Get this, buddy. There's no meaning to your puny little life. There is no puny little life, only an illusion of one. The search for meaning is the attempt to insert or assert meaning. The search for meaning is the attempt to insert or assert meaning. There is no world, and ipso facto, there can be no meaning. Now, I was trying to think of the phrase ipso facto. It's a legal thing. It's the thing is proven. It's like it's a fact without questioning, something like that. On the face of it, it's clear, something like that, right? Anne's like, I don't do legal stuff. Don't answer me. But I was trying to think of what that word, and what I typed instead, which I just think is hilarious, was there is no world and lorem ipsum. Lorem ipsum. So I'm like, what the heck is that? So I looked up lorem ipsum, and it's lorem ipsum is dummy text. Meaningless text that they put in on websites as a placeholder. So I just you know, word, chicken, bird, dog, you know, word. And I just thought that was really funny because I'm talking about the meaninglessness of life. And so it gave me dummy text, meaningless text. But I thought that was a happy coincidence. Let me go back to this statement. There is no world, and ipso facto, there can be no meaning. And you notice that I started this by saying the quote-unquote existential crisis was over, and it was. And I talked about this in my gathering that I led a couple weeks ago on the meaning of life. I talked about it extensively then. And I see very clearly here that I was thrilled to reach this conclusion. Conclusion things seems like a thought up answer, but it wasn't. It was more revelation. But there is no meaning. That any meaning is that which is applied. rhubarb. Kathy says rhubarb. that the only meaning that is applied, that is found, if you think you found meaning, it's the illusory self that's actually applied it. Because there's no meaning inherent. There's a flow to life. There's, certainly one of the best terms, I think, to describe this is the Tao, you know. there's not like any particular aim, like it's flowing to any particular point, but there's a balance in it, a harmony in it. NTI talks about it in terms of a symphony. You know, you're just a note in the symphony. But I was happy for that revelation. So again, there is no world, and therefore there can be no meaning. This is not to say there can be no enjoyment or no sorrow for that matter. There can be all kinds of comings and goings as we see in the world. That doesn't mean there's meaning. The next question is, if there's no meaning, does that mean there's only chaos? The answer to that question is undeniable. There can be order and no meaning simultaneously. There can be patterns that never move to a conclusory end. The ocean has a pattern, wave after wave after wave. But that does not mean it's trying to create something, be something, or get somewhere. It's just patterns. So if there's an order but no meaning, what does that mean? I wrote, not sure really. Somehow, however, I began to contemplate whether there was an I at all. Or really, was this just an attempt to draw meaning from the pattern, the patterns? You know, gosh, how many philosophers have ever lived that have tried to answer the question, what's the meaning of life? How many college courses devoted to that, right? Let's look at all this stuff that's going on and then from that try to deduce a meaning. The man's search for meaning. It's the individual's search for meaning. Why do I exist? Give me a GD answer. Okay, I began to contemplate whether there was an I at all, or really was this just an attempt to draw meaning from the patterns? Doesn't being a human enable me to string together the seemingly random events, actually all patterns, into some type of storyline that seems to impose upon them some meaning? You know, I was talking about those thoughts a while ago in the vision plan. I remember the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind, and so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and irrelevant. Ann talked earlier about how Muji's like, whoa, you are way too interested in all of this. And we maintain that interest because we're trying to search for our own meaning. We're trying to define ourselves so that we can make sense of all of this, of all of life, all of, right? Where do I fit into all this? And so this is why many of these things in this vision plan, this is why the vision plan's written the way it is, and this is why many of the things in this vision plan have been made so much easier for me. Because if I'm still trying to discern meaning, if I'm still trying to find my place in the world, I'm going to pay close attention because I don't want to miss any of those thoughts that might hold a clue. And none of them do. You know, that's what ego promises to tell you. Ego and Holy Spirit, inner wisdom, ask the same question. Who am I? And ego's going to voice, going to give you all kinds of answers. None of which are true. And if I can realize that I don't have to sort through those in order to find meaning, that I don't have to fit them in, this puzzle piece goes here and this one goes here, and then I can ignore them all. They're all meaningless and irrelevant. They can't tell, you know, just like, and I think I said this last time, just like Trinity says in the Matrix cannot tell you who you are. So you can just quit looking there for the answer to the question, who am I? If you find the answer to the question, who am I, out here somewhere, it's because you've constructed it. It's the same analysis. If you find meaning, it's because you made it up. If you find the answer to the question, who am I, out here, it's because you made it up. That's why we go within and ask that same question, who am I? And that just makes it easier. It's a blanket. I don't need any of that. There's nothing to sort through here. Again, the last sentence there was, doesn't being a human enable me to string together the seemingly random events, actually all patterns, into some type of storyline that seems to impose upon them some meaning? Then I wrote, I have been told by books, by teachers, by mentors, both, that there is no world and there is no me. This is interesting. I have to ask what that tells me. Okay, there is no world and there is no me. What does that tell me? What do I know about myself and the world, like on a firsthand basis, from direct experience? You know, and that's what Eshwar asked us, right? Tell me who you are without concepts. That's what Chapter 3 of The Untethered Soul talks about. Tell me who you are without concepts. What do I know about myself and the world on a firsthand basis from direct experience? Nothing, really. It is just as has been asserted. The only thing I know for sure is that I am. And I don't know if you've read Chapter 3 of The Untethered Soul yet. In that chapter, he goes through a little exercise he leads you through, and he's like, okay, picture a room, and there's a bunch of people in the room. There's a piano in the room. And he's like, okay, now take away the people on the right-hand side of the room. You okay? Yeah, I'm okay with that. Take away the people on the left-hand side of the room. There's nobody in the room. You okay with that? Yeah. Take away the piano. You okay with that? Yeah. You still see the room, the walls, and everything, right? Now take away you. Wait a minute. I mean, you can't, right? The one thing that remains is awareness. So that's a good clue to who we are. So I don't mean I am in some kind of, you know, esoteric, you know, lofty, I'm some big thinker, big philosopher. I mean, that's what I know. There's awareness here. I know that I'm aware. You know, the nature of what I am or how awareness works, or I can't say, but I know that I'm aware. What do I know about myself and the world on a firsthand basis from direct experience? Nothing, really. It is just as has been asserted. The only thing I know for sure is that I am. I also seem to have the experience of a very persistent belief that all things mean something. That is explained above, my need for a unifying theme. So how does not believing in this cobbled together self free me from anything? It allows me to see that it matters not what happens. Well, that's freedom, right? We were talking about love last night in Gentle Healing and you know, attempting to define it. By the way, Connie and I had a conversation later. Sorry, you're probably working, but that's okay. You're supposed to. but Connie and I had a conversation last night after Gentle Healing where we're like, yeah, you know, I can't remember. Of course, I can only remember what I said. There you go. She said something. I'm like, why didn't you say that during class? But I said, but you know, the Course even says love is beyond what can be taught. And that's why the Course in Miracles focuses on removing the blocks to love's awareness. So that's why we have a difficult time defining what love is. Because love is the essence of all things, right? But to pinpoint it and say it's this or that or this, go back to work, Don. By the way, you looked like you were listening intently, and I realized... Very good. I've exposed her. I know you're always listening intently. Yeah. Busted. I know you were listening. Yes. That's why you jumped when I said your name. Oh, shoot. Okay, let me get back to the point here. Yeah, this freedom. So let me read the sentences again. So how does not believing in this cobbled together self free me from anything? It allows me to see that it matters not what happens. There's nothing. We were talking about a while ago about, you think the world revolves around you. Yes. But if it doesn't, what does it matter what happens? Really? Love allows everything. Love allows war and genocide and child abuse. And love allows. It's like this open space in this room. It matters not what happens. I don't have to push the pendulum from the Tao around, right? I don't have to push it all the way this way so that it goes all the way that way. Life has its own balance. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dawn. Dawn says that cleared up so much for me, and it also denotes that love is not an emotion. So how does not believing in this cobbled together self free me from anything? It allows me to see that it matters not what happens. All things are as good as all other things. I am freed from my preference that things occur this way rather than that. And I wrote, I guess I have to question my assumption that if the entire universe doesn't revolve around me, it must not have meaning. It just wouldn't mean anything to a me. That's the same thing, right? So where does that leave me? The same. Just looking for a place to be warm and dry, sun on my face. So there is a preference. Sun versus clouds. Yeah, I guess I wrote. This is the bottom that ACIM talks about in the real alternative section. Yeah. Not so much the preference for the sun over the clouds, but this coming to this understanding. That life has no meaning, which is frankly hard to say out loud and frankly to say to all your shining faces. People don't want to hear that. People don't want to hear that. What do you mean life has no meaning? But that is the bottom that A Course in Miracles talks about. It's like men have died on coming to see this. When if they had taken one more step, something to that effect. I don't even know what it said. What does that say? Is my ACIM book in here? It would be, let me look that up because I keep quoting it, so it'd be nice if I would quote it correctly, don't you think? maybe. I just feel like it might have something to say to us. So let me see if I can find it. Sorry. Might be quicker to go get the book. I think it would be quicker to go get the book, not look it on Kindle. I'll be right back. Radio silence. All right. I'll get to look at my belly while I stand here. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. Oh, shoot. I really hard to go look it up, so I don't know. It's okay. I'm all right with that. I got about 42 different copies of ACIM. The one I don't have is the Foundation for Inner Peace, which is the, I think, the standardized version, right? There it is, Real Alternative. I can sit down, I guess. yeah, and this is talks about the simplicity of salvation. That's the name of the chapter. I don't know. I'm not finding it, so I guess I'm gonna have to let that go and read it later and get back to you guys on that. Here it is. Found it. It says, real choice is no illusion, but the world has none to offer. All its roads but lead to disappointment, nothingness, and death. There is no choice in its alternatives. Seek not escape from problems here. The world was made that problems could not be escaped. Be not deceived by all the different names its roads are given. They have but one end. And each is but the means to gain that end, for it is here that all its roads will lead, however differently they seem to start, however differently they seem to go. Their end is certain, for there is no choice among them. All of them will lead to death. On some you travel gaily for a while before the bleakness enters, and on some the thorns are felt at once. The choice is not what will be the ending, but when it comes. There is no choice where every end is sure. Perhaps you would prefer to try them all before you really learn they are but one. The roads this world can offer seem to be quite large in number, but the time must come when everyone begins to see how like they are to one another. Men have died on seeing this because they saw no way except the pathways offered by the world. And learning they led nowhere lost their hope. And yet, this was the time they could have learned their greatest lesson. All must reach this point and go beyond it. It is true indeed. There is no choice at all within the world. But this is not the lesson in itself. The lesson has a purpose, and in this, you come to understand what it is for. And by the way, if you haven't read chapter 31 for a while, that's right where I'm at. Chapter 31 of A Course in Miracles. It's a fascinating chapter because it talks all about this self-concept versus self. You know, that's what the world's for, and the alternative to recognize the spirit. And again, Course in Miracles, it seems to be written in terms that kind of makes that separation actually seem more of a separation. Like I'm choosing that spirit as opposed to that ego. No, it's all going on right here. So that's what we need to remember when we read A Course in Miracles. But that's the choice. So it's what we talked about. While ago, that the only choice is to have that direct experience of our truth. And we don't do that by looking at the world or what's going on in it or trying to find meaning there. Because the world was made to show you something opposite from the truth, different from the truth. But the point was, that the world has no meaning. The world has no meaning. but to rub my faith off, is a joyous discovery. It's that one step beyond this total hopelessness that folks find themselves in after they've tried road after road after road after road to find meaning, to give, they think they're going to find meaning, to give their lives meaning, and find it a fruitless effort. It's the same, basis that Alcoholics Anonymous is based on. You know, you hit bottom first. When you're empty, then you can find real meaning. And the real meaning can only be, you know, what Course in Miracles just said. What's it for? What's the purpose? The purpose is know thyself. Know the truth of your being. Yes, and Don says it also ties into how the Course states, I have given everything all the meaning it has for me. Given it. I didn't find it there. I gave it meaning. And, you know, this is what we were talking about last night in Gentle Healing, year one. It's these concepts of what the world means, what I mean in relation to the world, these labels, all of that, that keeps us apart from... There's a lot going on in here. It keeps us apart. Two or three different options for presenting themselves. It keeps us apart from our experience, for one. You know, we've been talking about that for a long time. As Eshwar said, you know, there's an experience and then you label it. But in the labeling of it, you know, you're once removed. But it keeps us, this labeling, this concept, this assigning of meaning keeps us from the truth of what we are. You know, we've been talking lately about, about how, well, it's like sorry for all the blah, 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 blah. But it's, again, as I said to Eshwar before the interview, I said, I'm willing to see that I don't exist. And he said to me, no, it's not that you don't exist. It's you've been mistaken about what you've taken yourself to be. Not his exact words. Then I asked myself, okay, if I'm not a human being, what am I? And you see, all of the concepts are built, all of the concepts that I have about everything, how it works, what everything means, how things are going to go, how they should go. That's all built on the assumption that I'm a human being. And as I think I have said to you guys before, I think most teachers would say, no, you're a human being, but you're more than that. Well, okay, maybe, but that's not helpful to me. So really, because what I have created, it has to be uncreated. What I have taken myself to be for 57 years, has to go. That's been my central orienting factor. Not just that I'm Jacqueline, that I, you know, that I used to, again, like chapter three in the Untethered Soul, that I used to be a judge, that I, you know, that I've been married. Well, y'all don't want to know how many times I've been married. But not just those characteristics, you know, of this human being. I want to strike at the root of the tree, not just the branches. And the root of the tree is the belief that I am a human being, a body, mind, personality. So if I can throw that out the window, if I'm not a human being, what am I? That opens it all up. That blows it wide open, blows it right out of the water. So that's the step beyond men have died upon seeing this. The openness to discover, okay, if everything, and you know, and the Course says this, lesson 189, let go of everything you ever thought was true or good or bad, or let go of it all. If none of that's true, what is true? What am I? You know, and for me, that really is contrasted with what is truth. What is truth vis-a-vis the person? You know, what I'm standing over here and now you tell me over there what truth is. You know, it really removes that filter. What is truth? The only thing I know is I am. The only thing I know is there's something going on here. What is it? I don't know. But I'm willing to find out. Okay. This writing that I wrote says, this is the bottom that A Course in Miracles talks about in the real alternative section. This is where we get medicated, pacified with the idea that we are all at home in the arms of God. What, I'll call it BS for the purposes of this. I said something about a horse, but same thing. This is where we get medicated, pacified with the idea that we're all at home in the arms of God. What BS? Okay. So if there is no me, why do anything? Well, don't. Don't do anything and see what happens. Can you really just sleep all day? Maybe. Will you eat? Yes, of course. Same for eliminating waste. But weren't you happy when you discovered there was no meaning, no great return? Yes, it took a load off. I'm hungry and sleepy now. Think I'll take care of those things. That was the end of that. But yeah, and you know, it seems a little facetious, and, really that's the willingness to live in the wobble, to live beyond the need for definition of anything. I do know I'm hungry and I do know I'm sleepy, so, you know, I'm going to eat lunch and have a nap. It's enough. Yeah, and Don writes, yeah, yes, because of that is the end of the search. If there's no meaning, then no more need for search. Amen. What a relief. Yeah. And this led to not deeper. I don't think you can go any deeper than that. Another revelation. I had been struggling with the I am bad thought. And I had been praying for relief from that. I am bad thought. So let me just, with that intro, let me read you what it says here next. My contemplations and experiences this past week have helped me see that it is not the I am bad belief that needs to be given up or overcome, but the belief that I am the person. Do you have anything to share with me regarding this insight, contemplation? And I refer to a Muji video here. I don't know what the video was. Muji's video on this issue is indeed very instructive. It is an invitation to explore the instability of the character you have created, not in an intellectual way, but experientially. And I said, I can see the space where the imagined itself is supposed to reside. I can see it bring back memories of when we did this and when we did that as a reinforcement to its actual instability. I can feel the fear that it issues when I call on those tactics. Interesting. Inner Wisdom says, Muji asks you to look at what feels fear and see that because you can see it, it cannot be you. What do you see when you look? I wrote, I see a desperate attempt to hold it all together. What else? Nothing. Good. Do you see how your desire to create meaning is present even now? This really is just sitting in that wobble. I see. Do you see how your desire to create meaning is present even now? How you have had to move beyond that desire to reach the honesty of perceiving nothing? This is the vigilance that is required. This is the courage not to name or define. Here is truth found. Open-hearted expectation. And I asked, is this my spiritual aspiration, to live an open-hearted expectation? In other words, further? That seems right. I can see how the desire to assign meaning wants to backdoor that. Tell me that it can't be that. I just made that up. And the response, isn't that the desire to manage things, to maintain the separate sense of self, to maintain a perspective you can believe in based on its familiarity? And I said, yes, I see that. Thank you for guiding me to see my aspiration. And then Inner Wisdom says, you know there's no one else here, right? There's not a you that is a you and a me that is me. It only appears that way when you take up the position of the person. Otherwise, we can see that it just is. No need for division or definition between us. I said, I see that I am tempted to write, you are me, but that doesn't seem like the truth. In other words, that feels mind-fed. Good catch. Inner Wisdom says, you are me is actually an adoption of divisive thinking. It is far more helpful to recognize I am. Or, if helpful, you are. The fallacy is in thinking I am and you are. Only one of these can be true because, as you say, there's only one thing going on here and you are it. But didn't really address what I started out asking about in that is fabulous, but it didn't address what I started out asking about letting go of the I am bad belief. So I just want to, we just have a couple of minutes left. So I just want to address that one more time. And it's just become, as I was saying when I read you my vision statement, it's just become really, really, really clear because the thoughts that I hear do not come from my mind, and they're just designed to uphold that belief in bodies. I just am able to see that as I see that, they're so easily dismissed as unimportant and irrelevant. And some of them are more attractive than others. But as I see it, it's like, you know, and some of them are more attractive than others out of habit, not just because they say, oh, you're great. But the ones that say, oh, you messed that up. You need to do better next time. That's not what Connie would have done. That's not what Anne would have done. You know, all of those are really exposed as meaningless, irrelevant. And the I am bad belief is all of those. It's just a cluster, just like the self itself. It's just a cluster of those thoughts. And so I don't have to sort through the ones that say, oh, you did that good.
Oh, you've really sucked at that.
You know, belief that those thoughts are me, once that goes, the I am bad belief has to go. So I realized I was sawing a little bitty branch up on the tree. And again, I'm taking that axe. I'm cutting the whole dang thing down. So anyway. Shauna just left, said there was a code red flood warning in La Vita. Well, okay. Love you guys. My time's up. See you next time. Thanks for letting me share.